Good morning, folks. Ram here.
Hey, Ram. Looks like it's just you and I at the moment.
Okay. How are you guys doing? How was Consensus?
Busy. Lots of people there.
That's great.
Hey, what's up, Ram?
Hey, Hart. Looks like our planned working session is not going to happen today.
Yeah. We can do it in a couple weeks, I think.
Yeah.
I'd love to do it next week, but I'm like all over the world, so it's not going to work for me. But if you guys want to do it, it's fine too.
Yeah, let's try to find some time. Week after next, not the greatest week for me, but we'll see. Next week is not that great either, actually. But
we haven't reached the doldrums of summer yet.
Yes.
Which is the best time to do this kind of stuff? But
all right, looks like folks are joining, so we'll just give a couple more minutes.
The host of this meeting, Tracy, is she on?
Yeah, Tracy's on.
Hey, Tracy, just a quick note. The Hyperledger Wiki calendar of public meetings is showing basically a broken link right in the middle.
On the architecture working groups page?
No, this is on the calendar of public meetings page.
Calendar of public meetings. Okay, let me check that. Oh, the embed that shows up there?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I have to figure out what's going on there. It used to actually expand and show the actual calendar. Then all of a sudden it stopped working.
Okay.
It's like, what did you guys update? I'll send a ticket out. I'll get a ticket open for that to see if they can figure out what's going on, see if they can look at the logs and see what's happening. Thanks for that.
right, do we have a quorum? Hey, Mink, looks like your jet didn't pan out.
I don't know, maybe the second time in 10 years that I've missed a flight. All I can guess is that there's some big meeting that's going on, because usually if you hang around late enough, you know, they cancel out and you can get a seat and you get one of those last minute seats. And there were still 8 people in front of me in the queue last night. So,
wow.
I'm guessing there was some big meeting that was being held in San Jose this morning, and I just got nailed. So, oh well.
Oh well.
It happens.
It's not the end of the world. Yeah, we'll survive.
All right. So, just a quick reminder: the antitrust notice is posted on the top of the meeting notes page. Let's get going. I put a link to the meeting notes doc. So I ping Nathan to see whether he's able to join. Let's bring up the last we were looking at the system identities paper, and I actually did ping Nathan to see whether he had any input, even some of those sections were things that he proposed. I don't see anything new. So far,
1-2-1-2, 1-2-1-2.
Sorry, what was that? Was that a test?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I didn't hear you guys, and something wrong with my audio. Anyway, it seemed to work now.
Glad you were able to join, Ben.
Yeah. How you guys doing?
Fantastic. So, quick reminder, I just posted the links to our meeting notes doc and the working doc on system identities. Maybe we can look at those and see whether we can make progress on some of those. I was hoping Nathan would put something in or join the call or both, ideally. But, you know, maybe we can make some progress in some of those sections. If not, we'll table that. I think last time we added a few fields on privacy. Todd, that suggestion looks good to me. So this is the section on privacy on the system identities paper. While the means of achieving this outside the scope of this version of the technique, such as an honest and zero knowledge proofs, examples of how this might be achieved. Everyone okay with that? Should I just accept that?
Yes. Boy, we are a quiet group this morning.
All right.
Which is rather unusual.
Which is rather unusual. The next two sections are preserving diffuse trust. I wasn't sure what we wanted to say there. And then the one after that was identifiers for ledgers, interoperable identifiers. Any thoughts?
I guess this is what we were counting on Nathan for.
Yeah.
Or someone else from Indy.
That's right. Let me see, did he reply? I pinged him on chat again. No, nothing. All right. The other topic that we had on the agenda that we wanted to start the discussion on was, I think, interoperability. Stan, you want to kind of...
Hey, actually, I have to admit I didn't get to it. Apologize. Nasty things like real projects, other projects rather, no less real, coming in the way. We're talking about the next chapter, right? The next volume. Not yeah. Identity aspects. Yeah.
That's right.
Sorry, I am not prepared.
No worries, but not sorry to put you on the spot, but I guess the question is. Wow.
We used to have the outline of the bigger document, which had the some of the bullets, right?
Correct. Let me find that document.
What about the rest of the sections in this identity document? Is that under interoperable identifier, is that all for Nathan to fill out?
I think that's an important one to kind of tease out here, and I'm not sure we need to wait on him. He's the one who proposed that section, but perhaps we can talk about that. I'm not sure we've drilled into it enough, but so certainly we can do that now. So I guess the question really in my mind is if for the basic system identities, what we've said is that they will all be registered on ledger. That is, the ledger will be the system of record for the binding of the identities to the public keys of the system entities. So the question then is, when we have two blockchain instances, obviously we can't get, if there is a common participating system entity between those nodes, they're going to be registered on both. Now, you know, the question is, what is the cross anchoring between nodes which are not participants in both? And, you know, I guess how do we think about that? And what is that's the basic function I really want to kind of tease out.
So, you know, the way I see it is that today, at least at this point, we know that we use some kind of X509 certificate. I believe that's the same case with Sawtooth as well, right?
I think in Indy, they're using DIDs and DDOs and so forth, but everybody else is using X509, I think.
Let me just check with the Sawtooth guys. I was not aware that they moved to the 509s for validator identity, because in the past they were just using ECDSI keys.
Okay, so they're just using the raw public key. How do they bind the public key at the identity, like the name or something?
As far as I know, it's not done. And like I said, let me go check with those guys. Let me just ask to make sure.
Okay.
So again, it's not permissioned in the sense of organizational or institutional. All of that can happen out of band, at least in the past. That could have changed within the last couple of releases. There's more there than I know. So let me just go ask.
Okay.
So, you know, I was thinking if that's the case, and then that's, you know, one commonality that we would use to at least cross-communicate between different implementations. However, when it goes to something like Indy that making use of ZK and item mix and stuff like that, then, you know, all bets are off.
Let's go back to the basic problem, right? I think so. The way we've defined it right now, we've said that you can use an external CA as the bootstrap root of trust, but all system entities will be registered on the ledger. That's our recommended approach, right?
Right.
Now, when we have in two ledgers, what does that mean for system entities? So interoperability between two ledgers, I imagine that if there are common system entities, then they will be registered in each of those. Are they going to be vouching for, you know, because they have access to the ledger doing that? I mean, what does it mean? That, I guess that's the question that probably we need to kind of look at.
So completely agree that for the scenario, the system entities have to be registered in both ledgers. And then the question is, are they going to be using the same identity or different identities that are somehow
linked? Please leave your message after the tone. When done, hang up or press the pound key.
What do we mean by...
Are we still here?
Yeah, I'm here.
I'm still here. Someone who was speaking got cut off. You know who was speaking?
This is Dimitri.
Hey, Dimitri. How's it going?
Hi. Yeah, going good. So my question is, what do we mean by common system entities? Like, what's an example that would be common to both ledgers?
I'm just imagining a scenario where there are nodes which are participating in more than one blockchain instance.
So I think part of the answer depends on what they're using as identity. If it's DIDs and DID documents, there should be ways of indicating equivalence, saying, you know, this node is same as that other DID, or is controlled by the keys that are similar to in that other one, right? I think there may be similar mechanism in X509, but I'd have to check.
Yeah, if you have, you know, the same name, well, at one extreme, you can just use the same certificate. Right. And then, you know, it's the same entity in the X509 world. So, Dimitri, perhaps you can give us a little bit more about your background. Welcome to the team.
Oh, hi. Yes, thank you. Sure. So my background is a distributed systems software engineer, previously of the MIT Solid project, which is a decentralized web that used web IDs, which is earlier incarnation of DID, I think. And I'm currently working with Digital Bazaar on Veris One Ledger and various DID related specs and libraries.
Great.
And in general, I'm interested in interoperability. So,
fantastic. So going back to the question then of system entities. Do we believe that, you know, for interoperability, there is a notion that we have common system entities that are participants in both nodes, both chains that we are trying to interop between?
Well, you have to, right? I mean, fundamentally, things don't need to interoperate if there aren't, like, sort of participants on both chains, right? So there has to be at least some kind of identity tie, right? Where, you know, there are ties between identities on two different chains, right? That has to be a minimum thing.
Right. I mean, there are two scenarios I'm imagining, and in one of them, you may not have actual common participants, right? So we can define a network-to-network interface in which there are peers between two different networks, but there's no not really a common participant. And the other one is that there's a common participant who's a participant between both networks. You see what I mean? So there are actually two different options there.
Well, if I'm making a transaction that involves a network or a blockchain, then I'm technically a participant on that blockchain, right?
Correct. But that's not the only way to do it, right? You can have...
You don't have to be the system entity on it, though, right?
Yes.
Oh, sure. The system entities don't necessarily have to have anything in common at all, right?
Correct. So since in this paper, we're dealing mainly with the system entities, I'm just trying to see whether, you know, it's too strong to go down the path of saying, you know, there will be common system entities necessarily. That's just one option. It's not clear to me that that's the only option.
Well, what are the use, have we defined any use cases for this kind of interop from having the same system entity, system identity? So say a node participating in both blockchain networks. In what scenario would someone want to do that?
Well, wouldn't that then become the bridge to interoperability between the blockchains themselves? The first step would have to be the identity.
Today, if we're looking at, you know, if, say, Quilt, for example, the interop there does not require common identities.
But I thought each connector in the ILP actually, well, it must be represented on.
Yeah.
equivalently on both sides. The connectors between themselves don't necessarily have to be.
We're getting confused. This is what happened to me a minute ago. We're getting confused between system identities and just identities on the blockchain, I think. Right. So the people running the validating nodes or the verifying nodes don't have to have anything in common, right? But the people, like the actual transactors that are making the transaction, need to have an identity presence on both blockchains, right?
I guess the question I have is, when you're trying to work between the two blockchain instances, right? Let's say you're doing a cross-chain transaction of some kind, like a Qlik-like transaction. Is there any need for the system entities on one network to verify the validity of the authentication, and to authenticate the system entities on the other?
So without going into interoperability, let me give you another example, which does require, let me just phrase it a little bit differently, that we need to externalize the identities, the system identities. If you want to make an attestation about the state of one ledger for use anywhere else, whether it's in another ledger or in some other application, then the identities that are a part of the ledger that's creating the attestation is very important. So if I want to be able to generate a proof that transaction's been committed in one ledger, how do I do that? I know Indy, because they're so focused on externalization of verifiable claims, has a lot of support for that. Sawtooth, I've been going around with those guys. There's, to my knowledge, there's no way of externalizing claims of proofs of commitment in Sawtooth. I think you could construct it for Fabric. Again, if you had the sort of core identities of the ordering services and the endorsers, I think you could construct something, but I don't know, Ben, if that's actually been done.
I'm not aware of anyone who try to do this. Well, actually, there's one person, one email question flowing through like a couple of days ago. Someone trying to create the same identity for both Fabric and Ethereum. And they're trying to consume some transactions on both sides. I'm not sure whether the person is at this point, but from the endorsement point of view, once the signature has been signed on the transaction, if the setup identity is available on the other network, then that transaction can be authenticated on other network.
Only if you've got a shared identity system.
Right. Right.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is, if you have two separate ledgers, how do I construct the proof? So if I want to move it outside the realm of a ledger, how do I construct the proof that something's been committed? Which I think is, we can talk about interoperable with a common identity system, but I think the question, Ram, you were asking is, how do we pull stuff out of one ledger and move it into another ledger? And that requires us to construct a proof.
Yeah.
Right. And that proof has to be rooted in the system identities, in the validity of the system identities. Yeah, I mean, even in Indy, it's the signatures of the validators, which is a well-known, relatively fixed pool, that gives you the proof. So I have to know who the Indy validators are and the signers are in order to verify the claim that comes out.
Isn't it just a threshold signature in Indy?
I believe so, but how are you verifying the signature?
You can just have the master threshold key, the public key.
Which becomes the representative, which is the externalization of the validating pool.
Right. Yeah, yeah. But you just have to have that key.
Yeah, and that's all I'm saying is that you can do it a variety of ways. But there has to be something established, which is the externalization of that ledger's authority. one way or the other, whether it's the threshold key or some other representation. Okay, silence.
I guess so. Does one network need, I guess when you're trying to go across networks, it seems to me that there needs to be some way of representing system entity identities in a way that it can be verified by the other ledger, right? Is that?
Yeah, exactly, right? If you're moving something from one chain to another, right, you need an externally verifiable proof that the asset is no longer on the first chain, right? If you want to, you know, kind of represent it to the second chain. And you need a proof somehow that the asset is being transferred from the first chain to the second chain, right? You need something on the second chain that can point to the first chain as to kind of where this thing came from, right?
So you need an externally verifiable proof for, you know, cross-chain transactions. Now the question is, does that become simpler if somehow we have a notion of the verifiability of system entities on one chain to the other? I'm trying to get to, is that a requirement for?
Yeah, I mean, if kind of the one ledger doesn't know the rules or identities of the other ledger, then this is just impossible, right?
Right.
So, you know, you have to know kind of what the rules are. Like both ledgers have to know what the rules are for the other ledgers to make this work, right? And these rules have to be public so that everybody has to know them.
Or at least the two interworking ledgers need to know them. Or, you know, the N interworking ledgers need to know them, right?
Almost, yeah, sure. Like we're talking about side chains.
Well, this is a very side chain. This problem is very related to side chains, right? We're moving something from one chain.
It's also, yeah, I was going to say, it's also relevant to side chains. But for any chain to chain coordinated behavior, you're going to have to do this.
Right, of course. But the side chains are definitely using the same identity system.
There's no reason.
The Bitcoin keys, right? Just the keys.
Well, if you're talking about side chains, if you're talking about sort of traditional Bitcoin side chains like Lightning and T-Chain and others, then they just use the same set of identities. And that's how they get around this problem. But if you're moving, for example, if I want to take... And I have a deep interest in this because this is exactly what we'd like to be able to support. If I want to take some information about a commitment of a transaction in Fabric and use that commitment to drive behavior in a PDO smart contract, then I need to know how to reconstruct the proof from Fabric that transaction has been committed.
And this is going quite deep into what interoperability means, right? But I'm just trying to see, can we tackle at least the system entity requirement? But, you know, maybe we just need to have a use case and drill down before we can get there.
But Ram, I think that's exactly what we're saying, is that the system identities, that the critical issue for interoperability or the critical issue for any externalization of a claim about a ledger has to be rooted in some notion of the system identities, whether it's a group threshold key, as Har suggested, or some other mechanism for doing it. Do you have other examples of where you think externalizing system identities matters?
You know, you mean other than cross-chain transactions? Is that what your question is?
Yeah, I mean, and the cross-chain transactions are exactly the thing we're talking about, right? Which is I have to be able to make a proof that I did something in one chain in order to get something happening in another chain, right?
Right.
So I have to prove some state of the ledger one to ledger two.
And for the other ledger to kind of trust this, then you need some notion of identities there, I guess. Okay, so we know at least a one solid use case where there needs to be, so what is the means by which system entities are, identities are shared across those ledgers?
I mean, I don't think cross-chain transactions is a use case. I think it's more of a tool that supports a lot of other use cases.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's...
Yes.
Agreed. There's going to be many different use cases which might need cross-chain transactions, but you know, I'm just generalizing that. So forget the semantics there. But coming down to it, to the problem itself, So obviously it's not, it's infeasible to have every, you know, interoperability purposes, we're not going to have every system entity registered in the multiple blockchains, right? So what's the anchor? Between them?
The anchor could be a lot of different things, right? I mean, for Indy, it would be the kind of master threshold signature verification key, right? For other blockchains, it could be something different, right? I mean, the stuff you could do a lot of different things if you were using SGX, right? So, I mean, I don't know that we necessarily need to focus on what the anchor is, but we just need to make sure that it exists, right? That's the key point, right?
Right.
Yeah, so I completely agree. I was going to say that for the purposes of the write-up, that we just need to point out that the anchor is needed and probably describe the functional
aspects of it. Okay. All right. Let me just propose some text here. Enable interoperability between ledgers. There needs to be cross ledger trust anchors that allow one ledger to rely on proofs generated by the other. I'm not in suggest mode. Let me mind X. Sorry.
You can just write, Ram. You don't need to suggest.
Okay. In problem, there needs to be cross ledger trust anchors allow one ledger to rely on proof generated by
I'd also point out that these trust anchors are kind of necessary if you want new people to join the network anyway.
Right.
Like if you don't have a public anchor like this, it's pretty impossible for new people to join the blockchain.
Yeah, talk more. What do you mean by new people to join the blockchain? I mean, we've talked a little bit about what enrollment, how enrollment happens, right?
Right, and enrollment also kind of requires some kind of anchor too, right?
Yeah.
That's all. I just wanted to allude to the fact that it's like these kind of anchors are almost certain to exist. I mean, maybe you can just come up with a blockchain that there isn't a public anchoring system, but I think in most practical systems, this is going to be the case that it already exists.
And so the trust anchor, so I'm trying to go from the trust anchors to the identity of system entities. So we've used some other external trust anchor to bootstrap system entities, which are within one chain. They are maintained on the ledger. That's our recommendation, right?
The tie doesn't have to be explicit, right? I mean, Indy already uses a threshold signature, right? You could have something like blind threshold signatures where the tie between the anchor and the system identities is there, but not necessarily explicit, right?
Right.
So we just need to have, a publicly verifiable anchor that is like somehow tied to the system identities, even if it's not publicly tied to the system identities.
Yeah, the trust anchors need to be tied to the system entities of each ledger, either implicitly or explicitly, right? Did I cover it? Implicitly.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay. Now, do we have any tighter requirement for, so let's say we go, it's explicit. So how do you establish the trust anchor? If you're saying that, you know, so each ledger can verify every system entity because, you know, there are entries in the ledger which bind the identity and the public key, right? So in an explicit trust anchoring mechanism, how does the other ledger verify that? It just needs to have access to that information?
Well, I mean, that's kind of a ledger specific detail, right? So in like a PBFT network, right, you can just, you have all of the verifying or validating nodes and you have their public signing keys, right? And that would be a trust anchor, right? So it really depends on the system implementation details.
Yeah, so let's just focus again on the what and not the how. I'm just trying to figure out in an explicit mode, what is the requirement? I know this is a slippery slope between the what and the how. As you double click each, you get closer to the how.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really answer that question without going into the how.
The question I'm trying to ask is there a functional requirement around interoperability of system entities, identities? And if so, I'd like to kind of call that out here.
I mean, I think our point is
more than the high-level description we've put so far.
But I don't think we can have a much more than a high-level description without going into the details, right? Our functional requirement is that there is a publicly verifiable trust anchor, right? And kind of if you want to go any lower than that, you have to like get into the messy details of what each blockchain is using for a publicly verifiable trust anchor. So maybe the way to do this is to spell out like a couple of things that some blockchains mm-hmm. use as a publicly verifiable trust anchor.
Okay.
So we can say
what does Fabric use today? It's just X509 certificates by actually individual nodes, right?
Right. So it's gonna be the go ahead, Ben. Sorry.
Yeah, it's just what you said by individual organization. That's what we call it. So each organization can select their own, CA and come to the table and say that, you know, this is my CA, and they exchange the certificates and to be included on the configuration block of a channel. And that's about it. And of course, you know, they all have to sign and so on and so forth, but that's the details in implementation.
But that is, so that certificate very bad, you know.
Yeah, I mean, so in Fabric, right, this is just going to be kind of the public keys of the validating nodes as verified by the certificate chain, right?
Yeah.
And then in something like Indy, it can be like the master public threshold signature key, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe we can just list those two examples and just say like, you know, examples of this like public trust anchor are, you know, the Fabric, you know, in Fabric it's this, in Indy it's this. I mean, you can even say in Sawtooth, right? It might be, you know, if you have SGX, then it can be just kind of any SGX verification, right?
Right, or the you could even root it in IIS. You can establish the chain of trust from IIS.
Yeah, so I mean, you can spell these out if you want, if you think people will have a hard time understanding.
So in fact, let's put it in there for now. We'll figure out how to kind of lay it out if we need to and abstract out those. And probably the trust anchors he is of each participating organization in each ledger, right? In Indy, the trust anchor is the master verification key. Is that right? Feel free to grab the cursor and fix it. The trust anchor is a master verification key.
They wouldn't be the CA. Well, it's not necessarily the CA, right? I'll take a gander at this. How does that look?
Looks better than what I had. So I guess in this sense, so what would the other ledger need to trust?
So, I mean, it just needs to, so these are, these public keys essentially are hard-coded in the chain, right?
Right.
So you just need to know this information, right? Mick, do you want to add something about Sawtooth there?
Sorry, too many mute buttons.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I probably should, but I really should think through. I'm going to have to get down to look at this and make sure. That's probably enough for now. Because actually, Dan and I have been having exactly this question, and the problem is that we're having a hard time figuring out how to externalize that chain of trust in a computable way. So.
Okay. So perhaps as homework for the next item, maybe we can at least flesh out this interoperable line fair. I think we've kind of captured some high level requirements, but there's something here that needs to be teased out, is my sense. I don't know if the rest of you guys feel that. I mean, I'm trying to see whether there's a general functional requirement that can be expressed more clearly.
The problem is I don't know how to express this more clearly, right?
Yeah.
It's just kind of this general thing, and it can be done in a lot of different ways, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you believe in SGX, right, then it's just kind of like one SGX attestation is enough, right? That's very different from something else, right?
Yeah. Let's find. So the SGX attestation sounds like the root of trust, but what I'm trying to get to is what is the how do we have established transitive trust between ledgers, even if it's rooted somewhere else. You see what I mean? So the root of trust lets us go the first in the chain of trust. We've gone from a root of trust to what's on one particular ledger. How do we go from one particular ledger to transitive trust between ledgers? So the way I'm interpreting the Intel attestation service is it's actually serving as the root of trust. And then in assuming Sawtooth, all system entities are registered on ledger, right? So that's your next level in the chain.
Okay, so hang on. I'm confused. If what I want to do, and I'm going to be very precise about this because this is exactly the question that we're running into. I want to be able to prove that a transaction has been committed in a Sawtooth ledger. All right? So the proof that I generate, I retrieve the block. Inside the block is the weight certificate, which is essentially the validation of a particular enclave for the consensus rounds. right, has all the signatures. I can compute the Merkle hash and do all the rest of the stuff for verification of that. But I take the public key and the identity for that enclave. I go back and retrieve its registration. The registration has the quote from the Intel attestation service. I can grab the 509 cert from IIS, get its key, use that key in order to do a verification of the IIS signature over that quote. And so that gives me that chain of trust back to that's rooted in IIS's authority. In order to do that, if I wanted to pick up an operation and drop it into another ledger where that ledger has to verify the integrity of the transaction that I'm claiming that I committed in the first ledger, in the sawtooth ledger, that new one is going to have to go back and follow that chain and do that proof. And the same would be true if we were moving from Fabric into Sawtooth. Whatever the Sawtooth validator is has to be able to go back and run that process. So it's the identities plus the process. And I think this was the part that Hart was trying to get at.
Okay. So you're saying, yes, there is a chain, but if you want to do the full verification, you're going to walk the chain every time you need.
And you're going to do it. Right, but you're going to do the same thing. There's going to be a process that you have to go through, whether you're validating something from Indy or Fabric. Sometimes it's a chain, and sometimes it's much simpler. It's been collapsed.
So the question I was trying to raise, Mick, was what is the first link between chains so that you got to walk?
But I don't know what that sentence means.
Okay.
I mean, the concrete example that we've been working on is I need to be able to get a proof of commitment from Sawtooth because I'm going to perform an operation in a separate space that Sawtooth knows nothing about. Only if the submitter of the transaction can prove to me that the other parallel transaction was committed in Sawtooth. I mean, this is how we're moving value back and forth between these. Mm-hmm. So it's a very specific process that I have to go through for verifying a Sawtooth committed transaction.
Got it. I guess maybe we should take an interoperability, use that as an interoperability use case. And maybe we, just because we are in this bridging state between, you know, what does interoperable identifiers mean for this doc, and then the next work item that we want to kick off, which is interoperability, maybe we can use that to flesh it out for the next meeting, given that we are out of time here today. Does that make sense? Yes, no?
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
So
did you say that we have some kind of interop doc beside this one, beside the system identity?
We don't have a doc. Stan was going to put together a straw man. So now maybe Stan, Mick.
So next week we go through that straw man.
Yeah, the week after next.
All right.
Can we have something that we can get started on that, using this as a use case, you know, commitment, a transaction between two ledgers where you need proof from one ledger to go to the other? And I guess should we use, do we want to start generically? We want to start looking at Quill? How do you suggest?
Sounds like maybe we should start generically.
Okay. All right, let's start generically, and then maybe we can come back and see whether we can add anything more on the interoperable identifiers piece. But I like Mick's approach to say, let's have a concrete use case which drives what that transitive trust thing is, and then maybe we can generalize it from one or two of those use cases, the wrong term here, but yes. What are the requirements for cross-chain trust anchors? All right, folks, good discussion. Thank you. So if you don't have anything else, let's wrap this up, and then we will, let's continue the discussion. If you have any other thoughts, send it to the email list. Stan, you're going to put together the framework, so you know you can send it to the list, and then maybe Stan can guide us through the interop framework. If you're okay with that, Stan, still.
All right. Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Thank you. Sure. Thanks, folks.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.